passion. This is all in for the love of the game. This is Love Set Match.
I mean, Andre Agassi had this goal. You don't have to be better than everyone else in the draw when you go out on the court. Like, you have to be better than someone that's across the net.
I think you got to stay active in a sport sense, you know, go out there, do some sports. I think it always makes you feel better, maybe more tired in the very moment, but actually the rest of the day feels better. And then I think giving back as well, you know, making other people happy is going to give you a good feeling too.
Welcome to Tennis Pal Chronicles, the podcast to feed your passion for all things tennis. I'm your host, Philip Kim, also known as Coach PK, the tennis pro for the Langham Huntington Hotel in sunny Southern California, and executive director for the nonprofit Love Set Match. This podcast is sponsored by Tennis Pal. Tennis Pal is the best app to find people to play with in your area, so visit tennispal.com to download the app today. Valerie, our wonderful co-host, is off to London for a vacay and posting beautiful pictures of her stay. If you have a moment to enjoy them, check them out on her Instagram. Well, this podcast is a very important listen for people who want to understand the progression of kids to pros. This podcast features WTA player Shelby Rogers. If you don't know the name, Shelby Nicole Rogers is an American professional tennis player. She has a career-high WTA ranking of number 30 in singles and achieved number 40 in doubles in February 2022. She has won 6 singles and 2 doubles titles on the ITF women's circuit as well. She won the girls' national championship at 17, so this is the perfect person to talk to about what it's like to be a kid playing tennis and turn pro. In this interview, she is speaking with Dr. Sean Fouts-Edmonds and Larry Lauer as they share insights on how parents can improve the performance and well-being of their children who are in competition. I think it's a great listen. I hope Shelby's story impacts you as much as it did me. If you'd like to support the podcast and the mission of Love Set Match, you can donate 2 ways. First, you can Zelle us at aces@lovesetmatch.net. And second, you can donate on our Facebook page, facebook.com/lovesetmatch.org. We'd love to have your support. Thank you so much for your generous support. So let's get into it. Here is Shelby Rogers.
Thank you for joining us today. We sincerely hope you get something out of this webinar. At the same time, impact your child's competition experiences. Over to our 2 powerhouse co-hosts. Dr. Sean Fouts-Edmonds is a former professional tennis player, reaching a high ranking of 55 in the world. And she was also a top-ranked collegiate and junior national player. Currently, Sean is a licensed psychologist with her own business, Advantage Performance Consultants, and currently sits on the USDA Sports Science Commission. We also have as our other co-host, Dr. Larry Lauer, is a mental skills specialist for USTA player development and heads up the mental performance team. As a player development team member, Larry has worked with junior, transitional, and professional tennis players and national coaching staff. He has been a sports psychology consultant for over 2 decades.
Wow.
With elite tennis players from juniors, colleges, and pros. We are privileged and honored to have a special guest today here, Shelby Rogers. Shelby Rogers is an American professional tennis player. She has a career WTA ranking of 30 in singles and 40 in doubles that she achieved in 2022 and has won 6 singles and 2 doubles titles on the ITF women's circuit. She also won the girls' national championships at a tender age of 17. So welcome to you, Shelby. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah. Co-hosts, Larry, Sean, how are we doing today?
Amazing.
Uh-oh, I didn't like that.
Yeah, there was silence. There was silence.
All good over here. Sure. Come on. Yeah. All good over here.
Yeah.
Especially since we have Shelby on here. So let's get those tough questions ready, audience.
Yeah. Very excited to have her.
This is what I have to put up, Shelby, this silence, this mental silence.
I think we were being respectful.
Respectful.
Yeah.
Without further ado, let's go to our title for today's webinar, Competition to Sportsmanship, Unveiling the Journey and Impact. If everybody would know that we did our last month's webinar with retired WTA tour player Christina McHale, who also sits on the Sports Science Commission, and we were talking along the same lines. So without further ado, let's go to our first question to you, Shelby, obviously. How would you define sportsmanship? Give us a little bit of foundational knowledge from your perspective in terms of the general or specifically as it relates to your tennis play. If you could delve into maybe a progression from juniors into the pro, that would be phenomenal.
Wow. How much time we got?
45 minutes.
I think I'll start off by saying sportsmanship is just, I would say, the way you display your behavior, the way you present yourself in response to others, in response to your feelings, in response to outside influences and experiences. So how are you presenting yourself in the most genuine way possible is how I like to look at it. How do I want to, you know, present myself, respect the game at the same time? That's a big thing for me is, you know, as much as tennis is given to me, how can I treat the game in a way that reflects that? And so I guess in short, it's just the golden rule, right? Like, how do I treat others and other things and experiences the way that I would want to be treated? For me growing up, that's how I was taught. That's how my parents raised me. My coaches raised me to be respectful of others. You can still want to beat them and be respectful of them. Don't get me wrong. But to just present yourself in a way that's worthy also of other people, you know, wanting to be that way too, and being a role model, to be prepared to step into that role if you need to, for others to look up to you. And so from a very young age, I always wanted to be a pro tennis player. I think at 7, it sounds a little ridiculous, but I really believed it and I said it proudly. And I had a lot of people around me that supported that, which I'm very thankful and grateful for. They didn't tell me I was crazy or silly for dreaming big. And I think that's really important, but also teaching me the rules of the game, how to be respectful, how to, you know, go on court like you're already a professional was something I was told a lot.
Brilliant.
Shelby, over to you, Sean.
So Shelby, I think you sort of answered the question I was going to ask, but so as you mentioned that your parents and the people around you really role modeled and supported you in this journey, but also taught you the personal characteristics that are going to last longer than the time you play. And that's character, integrity, respect for the sport, respect for your opponent. And so when you were a new tennis player, when you were 7 years old and thinking about being a professional tennis player, how were you taught what it means to be a good sport?
I think it was always emphasized that tennis was a very small part of who I am. And they emphasized that becoming a good person, however you define that, becoming a respectable person with values and morals and, like you said, characteristics that are looked up to is important outside of winning and losing. So that was emphasized a lot. My mom would always say, you know, if you don't want to play, it's okay. Like, she would push me to do well, but also gave me the option of, if you want to do something else, it's okay. If you don't win everything, it's okay. It's also really helpful to fail. What are we learning from these failures? Yeah. And I think just, again, emphasizing, how are we growing as a person? How are we also helping those around you as we're going through this process? So it might have taken me a little bit of time to get there and truly understand it, but just having, you know, my parents, my coaches, everyone around, having the same message being conveyed to me was really helpful.
Yeah, the your support team, your tribe, you know, you want to have around you that really supports what your goals are and keeps balance, because it sounds like you had a really balanced upbringing, one that emphasized the parent-child relationship, which is what we talk a lot about in these webinars, is to really pay attention to that. And you're growing a person who happens to play tennis, right? That's what we need to think of first. So thank you.
Sorry, I just want to add one thing. I see a comment real quick saying it takes a team, even though it's an individual sport. And yeah, absolutely 100%. Even though I'm the only one stepping out there on the court, behind the scenes, you have so many people encouraging you, helping you stay grounded, helping you, you know, understand all of these emotions that you go through. Because a lot of times I'll come off the court and I'll start speaking about what I felt happened. And my coach or, you know, whoever I'm talking to is like, Shelby, that's actually not how we perceived it. So a lot of times that feedback or even, you know, watching yourself on video, that sort of thing can help a lot because your feelings can take over and it's just like a very different experience. So yes, 100% a team effort, even though it's an individual sport.
Great. Great answer.
Excellent. Yeah, it's great stuff, Shelby. And so glad you're here. And I knew this would be awesome to have you here. So, that awareness you're talking about. Because of that awareness that your team, your parents, your coaches are helping you develop over time, how did you see, you know, as you went to higher levels of competition in tennis, how did your views on sportsmanship evolve? How did they change from when you were small, you know, and when we're small, oftentimes, you know, it's pretty self-centered or whatever. But as you got older and, you know, went through maybe national tournaments, you know, starting to play on the pro circuit. How did that sportsmanship in your eyes evolve over time?
So I think there's two things there that I'll touch on. The first is that I noticed a lot of other competitors were more cutthroat than I was. And I hadn't seen that level of it growing up in Charleston, South Carolina, playing in the South and, you know, playing a lot of smaller tournaments. Not too many bigger ones. I didn't see the, you know, international influence till a bit later. Secondly, is that the game is much bigger than one person. So I noticed that, again, like you said, it's not all about me. It's not only my matches that are in this big pool of what we call the WTA, right? So now I'm a part of this organization that's also a business. And so I have to look at it a little bit differently. So now my sportsmanship, the way I play, the way I perform, the way I entertain, because at the end of the day, we're professionals, we entertain when we play tennis, right? And so seeing it from that lens was a little bit different too, because now, okay, my sportsmanship means that I can grow the game. I can give back to the game. I can treat the game in a way that is, I mean, at the end of the day, just professional, right? So I think those were two things that shifted a little bit for me. Growing up in juniors, I thought, oh, everybody's just going to be nice, shake hands, you know, play fair, give you a redo if they miss the call. And like, that's definitely not the case because now we have money, points, career, life on the line, pretty much. Some people, you know, play to survive. Some people have more privileged situations than others, you know? So there's a lot of different variables that come in that I had to really learn and mature very quickly, I think.
Would it be safe to say, Shelby, that some of the issues that we see with sportsmanship changed from the juniors to the pros, being that, you know, now you're playing pros, often you're going to have someone calling or at least have an official there. Versus the juniors, you're making your own line calls. Did you see much difference in the kinds of unsportsmanlike behaviors that were happening when you went from juniors to pros?
I will say when I played a couple of the international events in juniors, I saw some shocking things. So I don't want to say that it's completely different because I do feel like there's a different level of parental involvement in the juniors still when they're minors. So, you know, playing Eddie Herr, some of the really big international events for the first time, which I only played a couple times anyway, I wasn't even good enough. I remember playing once at Eddie Herr and on the two courts down from me, they had to call security because the guys were literally in a fist fight. And I was like, what is happening? I've never seen this. So I think I don't want to say that the pros are, you know, like more cutthroat and like the sportsmanship is just not there, because that's not the case at all. I, from my experience and the majority of matches I've played, have been very enjoyable. And, you know, the sportsmanship is there because everyone does respect the game, and they've learned over the years that there's a better way to do things. So I don't really want to like throw it under the bus like that, but I just will say that when it becomes your job, I think it just looks a little bit different.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I was thinking as you were talking, Shelby, that you really emphasize the part of, what did I write? You behave well regardless of what the other person is doing or saying, right? You stay kind of in your space. You keep focused on what your own values and morals are. And like you said earlier, you entertain, but you also have the power to role model how the younger generation or your colleagues or people who are also on the tour, how they can behave, right? So they can look to you and say, hey, you know what? Shelby dealt with this situation in a way that was really like classy and elegant and respected her opponent and her game. So I really appreciate the message that you're giving us today. So having said that, is there an example of when you experienced bad sportsmanship or an opponent was cheating? We get a lot of these questions. And how did you respond to it?
I think, again, not too many instances, and I would like to think it's because I'm friends with a lot of the girls on tour that they would like to respect me as well. But there have been a few, you know, maybe unnecessary injury timeouts or bathroom breaks or a double bounce that maybe they didn't call, or if they got hit in the arm and didn't say it hit them, but you know, just little things like that, where it's more of, I try to think of it as like, okay, that's on them. If they don't want to own up to that situation, I can't really do anything about it. So again, another message that was kind of conveyed to me growing up is control what you can't control. So how am I going to respond to the situation? They're going to choose to do what they want to do. The referee is going to say, I didn't see it. Okay. There's nothing you can do about that. So how can I control what I can control now? So I have a few options. I can respond in a way where I get angry and then lose the next few points in the next few games. And then, okay, now I've kind of taken myself out of the match for really no reason. Or I can say, all right, it is what it is. We get a new point. We're still in this, you know, one point doesn't make the match, and kind of respond in a more positive way, reset, go on to the next point. Also, I have a little saying just in my mind, the ball doesn't lie, because a lot of times when that happens, I'll win the next point and I'm like, see, it was to go. So just kind of finding some humor in the situation too helps me a lot to loosen up and relax a little bit.
That's amazing. I love what you just said. I know that, and this might be something that could be helpful as well, is if somebody's acting poorly on the court, you know, maybe there's something going on at home, not always, right? But having some empathy, if there's a pattern of poor sportsmanship, have empathy as well as some compassion for what they're going through. And if you remember that, then maybe the reaction will be kind of less big, right? And so you really just kind of stay in your own lane, like you said, and focus on the next point. Because if you get mad about the point before, then you've already lost the next point. And
also great. For me, the humor part works, because I like to be a little bit more relaxed when I play. If I'm really intense and too amped up, I actually don't perform as well, which is interesting. But some people, a little more competitive, maybe need that extra energy. You could also, you know, take that reaction as a way of them trying to find other ways to beat you, because they're struggling with what you're trying to do to them. So it's actually can be seen as a positive thing of, okay, they're trying to do everything they can to problem solve their way out of the situation. So it's just, I think with any sort of mental skill, just sort of shifting your perspective, reframing, thinking about it in a little bit different way. If you can, it's very difficult, but
not easy.
Yeah.
I love that empowering message of, you know, that this is what my opponent has to do to try and defeat me, and turning it into something that empowers you then to continue to play your game or continue to push forward instead of getting hung up on a call. But, you know, I think one of the things we see too, Sean brought up empathy, right, Shelby? And I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but a lot of times if you see a young person cheating on the court, they're feeling pressure from somewhere else. Now, it may not be the case, but in many cases, they might be being pressured from somewhere else to win, to, or at least perceive it as that. What are your thoughts on that, Shelby?
Yeah, I think that's something I actually struggle with a little bit, because I feel empathy is something that I feel very deeply, and I'm very maybe more attuned to it than some other people, just from, I'm a very emotional person. I wear my heart on my sleeve. I notice other people's energy. Like I kind of, I'm a bit more introverted, but I just absorb, you know, other people's energy and actions when I go into a room. And I've had to work on that a lot over the years. Of just being in my space and creating what I need to do. But I think, you know, seeing the younger girls and sometimes the way they react, or new players on tour, I find myself not wanting to get, how do I say this? Too empathetic, where then I'm feeling what they're feeling, right? Yeah. But in a way where, okay, maybe how can I help? Maybe how can I give some advice or ask questions? Just maybe start a conversation. Maybe they don't know anyone on tour. Maybe, you know, they're feeling lonely or left out. I mean, there's a million reasons that they could be acting out, right? And I don't want to assume what they're going through. But sometimes just a hello, like, goes a long way for someone that's new on tour, or, you know, even in juniors at a big event for the first time, whatever it may be.
That's such a good point, because it's easy to assume that, oh, they're just a bad person, right?
Right.
They're a bad person that does bad things. They cheat. And I think that's the almost some of the conversations that happen around the players, right? When people get a reputation, but if you actually get to know that person, you might see it's different than, you know, they're experiencing certain things that we're not aware of, you know?
And I can give plenty of testimony to players that are very different when they're on the court compared to off the court, or who I thought I would never have anything in common with, would never get along with. And they're some of my really good friends now, you know, I've got to know them a little better, and they just have this competitive thing that comes out when they get into competition mode, which has gotten them to be where they are, very successful. Would I do it that way? Probably not, but that doesn't mean it's wrong, I guess. I think giving everyone a chance is something that I try to do. Have I been burned by it? Sure. But that's just the way that I choose to go about what I do.
I appreciate that. You're kind of segueing into the question that I was going to ask. And do you find much of a relationship or a correlation between the player's sportsmanship on the court and their personality, their attitude off the court? Maybe not with some people, but do you think that your personality plays much of a role in your sportsmanship on the court?
Yes, absolutely. I think tennis is one of the sports where you can actually see it pretty clearly. I am reminded of Roger Federer. He did an interview one time and he was talking about the differences and the rivals between him and Rafa and Novak, and, you know, how they kind of have done it in different ways. And he was saying for the longest time when he first started playing, he was trying to be more intense, more fired up, more kind of the way Rafa would be, more just physical overall. And he would just get tired. And he was like, I was trying to be somebody that I wasn't. And so he had to learn that I could still bring the same intensity, the same level, the same everything, but just subdued a little bit in the way that I wanted to. And we go back to the beginning where I said, trying to be the most genuine form of yourself. And that is very much reflected in the way you play.
No, that's awesome advice. And for young people, that's hard to figure out. You talked about figuring out how you kind of absorb others' energies and take that on. And I think then you start getting into some of the almost like emotional intelligence literature that you've probably read some of that.
So and, good.
Right. And that idea that we can be aware of other people's emotions and feel some empathy, but we don't have to take on their emotion. We can kind of distance ourselves from, you know, that emotion and understand what our emotions are. Right. And I think that's again empowering. What you're talking about is this awareness of what others are going through and having some empathy, but at the same time, knowing how to be aware in your own space, as you mentioned. I think that's a very powerful message.
And I would add that the first step to that is just knowing who you are. I think being really clear of what kind of, firstly, person you want to present, what, and then on top of that, what kind of tennis player you want to present. So it's almost like two aliases, if you will. First and foremost, where's my identity outside of tennis? Who am I? What do I believe? What do I want to portray to everyone? And what makes me happy, what brings me joy, of course. And then also, what kind of tennis player do I want to be when I get out there? It's okay to be a little bit different, I think. I don't think that's wrong at all.
No.
I sort of had to teach myself to be a little more cutthroat, if you will, when I get on the court, you know, because I am like a really nice person. I'm not, I just, I don't know. That's
how I can vouch for that. She is a nice person.
But like, that's not ideal sometimes when you're trying to beat someone on the court, right? So I think being a little bit different is okay.
Can I chime in there very quickly? We're getting a plethora amount of questions coming in. And I think you've had some touch points here, Shelby, is that knowing that our parents are trying to deal with that pressure environment, that pressure cooker environment around competition, and you seem to have done it on a appropriate level, is that how did you have fun and deal with the stress and anxiety? I'm synthesizing a few questions here, but they all point towards, I mean, how did you keep it fun? How did you deal with the stress and anxiety around junior match play?
So for me, I was very fortunate to grow up with a really awesome peer group around me. I practiced with a lot of fun girls. I was always the youngest one, actually, which is interesting, but we had probably 10 girls that I could go practice with. We would have fun. We could go to lunch. We could hang out outside of the court as well. And I know not everyone has that situation. So for me, that was a unique thing that I'm very blessed to have because I just wanted to be at the tennis courts, right? It was my playground, basically. I just really enjoyed being there. It was an escape for me where I could leave everything else behind me. I would come from school and just say, no more schoolwork here. We're going to play tennis and have fun. So that was a really cool opportunity for me that I had in the academy where I trained in Charleston, South Carolina. And then on top of that, I was raised in a Christian home and the faith was a big part for me. That's not for everyone, but for me, that was huge. And a big reason and part of why I was able to sort of have my identity outside of tennis. But I think just going back to the message of like tennis is such a small part of who you are is really important. Whatever else you can prioritize in your life and, you know, find that balance, I think is really important of, okay. I mean, for a while, don't get me wrong. Everything was tennis, right? That's all I wanted to do. But outside of that was also, you know, friendships and family and Sunday dinners with, you know, my grandparents, whatever it is, there's valuable things outside of the sport. So that was helpful for me. And again, that's not going to work for everyone, but I think for me, helped me really find that balance.
Sorry, quick follow-up question to that is that you've had probably one of the very few professional players to have an awesome singles and doubles. How does doubles feature into, or, you know, from a team environment perspective, is that we are very privileged to have an individual sport and also a team sport per se. So how did doubles feature in terms of, you know, your sportsmanship while you were playing doubles around team and then also around that fun? It seems like it was added value to you from a sportsmanship stroke socialization stroke having fun type environment.
Oh, definitely. And I think on top of just being able to practice serve return, get more time on court, you know, winning is a habit, as they say. So if you get some doubles wins, it often correlates to the singles court. I think I also was able to observe, and I've played with a lot of different partners, right? And the season that I actually did the best was when I played with one girl for the whole season, which was a lot of fun, but I've done it both ways. And I've been able to observe different ways people compete and respond to stress. And I'm just a very observant person. I got my degree in psychology and I just love understanding people and why they do what they do. So for me, it was like, not that I was studying my partners, but I was just able to see the different ways that people were handling situations or competing. So that was really helpful for me. And on top of that, probably the biggest thing I've learned from playing tennis is the way I talk to my doubles partner. And often I come off the court and I'm like, why do I not talk to myself that way? because the inner self-talk that I give to myself is very, very different from the way I talk to my partner if she misses a return or misses an easy volley or whatever it may be. So that was a really helpful thing that sometimes I even to this day find myself being like, would I say that to my friend or my partner or someone else? And just kind of keeps me in check with the self-criticism.
Thank you. Awesome. Over to you, Sean.
So Shelby, I think you brought up something that's what I tend to, when I work with athletes as a clinical psychologist, one thing that I do is ask in the first session, like, what are some things you say to yourself? What's the self-talk? What's the trigger? How do you identify patterns? And I ask, like, would you say those things to your best friend? And if not, why do you say them to yourself? And so I think that's a really key piece. It's a controllable for any player as well as any parent. So I think that's a great point you brought up. Another one is the emphasis on the identity outside of tennis. You know, when I work with athletes, I ask them, you know, what's your life like off the court or off the golf course or outside of the ballet? Do you have friends that you spend time with? Do you see the city that you're in to perform? I mean, it's really important to have that balance. It's going to help with longevity, but it's also going to help create more fun, which is a big piece of why people stay in tennis, right? All right. So having said that, what rule or regulation do you feel gets broken most often in pro tennis, and how would you solve the problem?
Oh, gosh. I would say, and they've kind of already addressed this, but you know, the bathroom breaks and the injury timeouts are sometimes a little bit fishy, but the injury timeouts, you can't do too much because you can't deny someone that they're hurting or that something happened, right? You can't really regulate that too much. The bathroom breaks, they've put a time limit on it. I think that's great. Just making it more necessary. On top of that, gosh, I mean, there's like little things here and there, but I would say those disrupt the flow of a match more than anything. Before, I would have said on-court coaching, but we don't do that anymore. So I did not like that at all.
No.
But yeah, I think just, you know, the strategic breaks, which I guess could be part of the game in a way, but for me, it's just, I don't like it.
Sort of like gamesmanship, right? Do you find, I mean, could you also emphasize the fact that you have friends, right? And that that's really important for you. You've got people that when you go to tournaments, you know, you can hang out with and you trust them and you have this bond. Do you find that that when you're friends or when you know a person on a personal level that their sportsmanship is better? Or do you notice the change?
Yes. Actually, that's a great question. I think I do. I've never really thought about that before, but I think because I have to play my friends constantly you know, other American players or other girls that I've gotten to know really well on tour. And I think there is a level of respect when you get to know each other and you've helped each other through some sort of situation or injury or tough moment where you can connect. And then you get to the net, hug, you know, sorry, actually, I don't like playing you, but you know, it is the way it is. And then you can continue that relationship outside of the court. And it's not an easy thing to learn how to do, but going back to sort of where the tennis court is the escape kind of place, you go on the court, you compete, leave everything there, leave everything on the court, come off the court, resume, you know, regular scheduled programming. And I think mentally, it can be very difficult, especially if it's a tough loss or a really close win even sometimes, but that's part of it too. You know, that's part of the joy that you can get from the sport, those battles that you can have with your friend. You can share the court with your friend playing professional tennis at Wimbledon, wherever it is, you know, and that's like pretty amazing too. So again, just being able to reframe in a way that you can be grateful for part of it, I think is helpful.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think when you emphasize having friends and relationships and you really make that a priority, I think that was evident when I played 40 years ago. You know, And it was something where when we played, we knew we trusted the other person. And we knew that after the match was over, whoever won or lost, we might need a little decompression time. But we were able to kind of say, hey, you want to go shopping or you want to go have a bite to eat? And I think that's something that is really important for the parents or the coaches that are listening to this webinar is maybe you cultivate the friendships, right? So then you have less opportunity or less bad sportsmanship. I don't know if opportunity is the right word, but I do think that's a really important piece of what you said today because you learn trust and validation.
Yeah, those are good points. And yeah, I do think if you know someone, you generally are going to be less likely to try and do certain things outside the rules or the norms of the sport to get an edge. So it would seem like a really good recommendation. What you're saying here is build up those relationships. It's not you against the world. You can have friends. We want to see the kids have friends in tennis and outside of tennis, of course. But so it's not these negative rivalries that occur, more so kind of almost thinking about lifting each other up by the quality of the tennis, you know. And it's really fun when you see two competitors go after it, go hard, but are friendly and are good sport and really make each other better. So with that in mind, Shelby, that could be a recommendation for promoting sportsmanship. What do you think are some other strategies or recommendations you might have for promoting sportsmanship in junior tennis? What are some thoughts you might have?
So I'll just add one more thing to the last thing but I can do it together. Sure. I'll say that competitiveness doesn't have to mean isolation. Going to that, like, it's okay to push each other and be kind to each other and help each other, because actually you see a lot of times when girls or guys from the same country do really well kind of together at the same time, being rivals and competing and pushing each other, and they all sort of move up together. So I would say that's one recommendation, is to genuinely find a way to root for your friends. Not only will it help yourself, but it will just create a really cool environment where everyone's more competitive and, you know, pushing each other to levels that you don't even think you could get to, maybe. And I saw that a lot coming up with my, you know, friends that played from the USA, and we all got to be at, you know, a very high level on the pro tour, which is really cool. And I think every week you see a lot on social media, even, where girls will repost congrats, you know, for someone winning a tournament or a big match, or repost videos from their friends. And I think that's so awesome, just genuinely supporting each other.
That's awesome. You all competed a lot in practice too. I remember that. So got after it.
Some days better than others, but overall it was a group effort, I think.
We worked out the kinks quite a bit in Boca, so it was all good. So do you have other ideas about how we might promote sportsmanship at the junior level, Shelby? Any thoughts on that?
Gosh, I haven't been to a junior tournament in a long time, I will say that. But some of the videos I've seen are honestly really disappointing. And I think, I don't know if there's a way to regulate the referees a little bit more, because sometimes there's not even a ref, like, within, you know, sight anywhere. And then the kids are just kind of left to duke it out, and then the parents get involved, and I'm just like, what is going on right now? This isn't even a tennis match anymore. So I don't know if they can tweak that a little bit. Again, like, I'm speaking from a very uninformed place on junior tennis right now, I feel like, as far as the rules go. But also being able, and I think the WTA does a good job of this, of like promoting when there are moments in matches that have good sportsmanship, and like sort of recognizing that, giving that a little more attention so that the kids want to look up to that and see that, and making sportsmanship cool again, if that's a thing. I don't know. But I think I tried to do my part on that front, and, you know, where, okay, this is the way I enjoy my sport, and I want to inspire other people to enjoy it the same way. So that, I guess that's where I see the most influence.
That's awesome. There's this wonderful attitude you bring to it, Shelby, where you want it to be fun and competitive and intense, and yet have those friendships. And I think if more people sort of think of it that way, then a lot of the issues that we see would be cleaned up because, you know, we would respect one another and want the best for everyone, versus just me. I'm getting mine and it doesn't matter what happens, you know, how this goes for other people. So a wonderful attitude you're displaying about this whole thing.
I would just say that for me, so I played a final last year in San Jose, the 500 WTA against Kazakina, and she and I are pretty good friends. She's a super nice girl. And after the match, you know, obviously we're able to be, I was upset that I lost, but we were able to be nice to each other. And it's one of those things where I was like, the next week, kind of going into practice in the next tournament, I was like, would I feel differently this week had I won that tournament? Would people view me differently? Would I feel different about myself? And I've talked to a lot of girls over the years now that I'm sort of towards the end of my career, if you will, the latter part of my career, whatever you want to call it, is like, even girls that have won multiple Grand Slams, singles, doubles, whatever it may be, would you have felt different if you won one more? Would you have felt different if you didn't win that one? You know what I mean? And it's like the trophies sometimes, actually, I'm going to be bold here and say all of the time, don't have as much value as you think they do. So it's the little things in between where the value comes from. It's the friendships, the experiences, the battles, win or lose. Those are the things you remember and that I remember now. I've won smaller tournaments. I haven't, you know, reached a lot of my goals that I've set. Am I still proud of myself? Yes. Do I want to accomplish more? Yes. But like what remains is not the trophies, I guess, is what I'm just trying to say. So it's like, where can you find the most value throughout that time? Does that make sense?
That's an excellent message.
It felt like a lot of words.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. I think that message hit home. Very well. Yeah, I know I don't even know where my trophies are, to be honest. But I do remember my son and I were just, because we're back visiting my parents and my wife's parents that live close together. But we were at a local baseball field and I was telling the story about how I hit a grand slam in the playoffs on this field that we're now last night playing together on. And it was cool. Who knows where that trophy is? Probably in the garbage or stored away somewhere. But that memory and being able to share it with him, and of course remind him that I'm still a better baseball player than he is at this point, but he's catching up quickly.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll say most recently, like my last match at Wimbledon on center court against the defending champion, like opening the, I was like, I can't even go out there and play. This is ridiculous. Roger Federer was there watching. The princess is there. The Royal Box was like, this, what is happening? But being able, I didn't win the match, but being able to go out there and find a way to enjoy the battle and enjoy the atmosphere and this incredible opportunity that you have, it just helps you experience that moment in such a different way instead of, oh my gosh, I'm losing and now I have a bad attitude and now, you know, I don't know, whatever it may be, but just finding a way to view it, yeah, from that lens, I guess, is helpful.
We're nearly running out of time, Shelby. This has been great conversation. Maybe if you don't mind, we have obviously parents and coaches predominantly on our call. What are some top tips or one point that you could recommend to them in order to facilitate? I mean, you've spoken a lot about this fun and with your socialization with tennis and maybe rounding it off from a sportsmanship point of view.
Gosh, two things are kind of coming to mind. I would say one, to sort of allow them sometimes to make decisions for themselves. And the second thing, which kind of carries from that, is to allow them to fail as well. Like, it's okay if they fail. Some of the toughest losses I've had, like, I've learned the most, and then it's propelled me to do something even greater or learn from that. I know it's super cliche, but honestly, it's true. So if they make a decision, and like, don't take this on a big scale, please, but if they make a decision or something about a match or a tournament, maybe that maybe disagree with, but maybe they can learn from it. Like, maybe that's okay. I don't know. I think failure is okay, and not to just get too, yeah, upset or worried about how much they're winning or losing at a pretty young age, I think.
Awesome. Any last comments, Larry Strong? We got 3 more minutes.
Of course I do. Yeah. So something that you said earlier, Shelby, that Dr. Jim Lehrer, when he was on our webinar a while ago, was the emphasis on spirituality, right? And spirituality can mean different things to different people. But Dr. Lehrer really emphasized that that's a component of balance in life and looking at character as a scorecard, but also looking at the balance in life and including that piece. And I mean, spirituality can be spending time in nature, or it can be, like you talked about, your Christian faith, but it is a really important piece, I think, of making being on the court not the end all, right? You get perspective, you're able to take a step back and look at things more objectively when you have balance in life.
That's great. Yeah.
Really excellent good. Points. I think that would follow up on what you're saying, Sean, that those that are very spiritual have probably a good connection with their values and are aware of them, and they're more likely to stick with their values when there is temptation maybe to go outside of that. So I think the awareness, maybe with that spirituality, become more aware of that value base. The thing I wanted to bring up, Shelby talked a lot about role model, and you know, we may consider that like, well, Shelby's a pro, so she's a role model. But I believe, and the JTCC has made this a part of their training program, but anyone can be a role model. So if you're 15 and you're training and there's younger players, you can be a role model for them. So you don't have to be a pro player to be a role model of doing things the right way, creating an environment where people are better for it, right? They're respectful, they get along, they have fun. So that's one of the things that I'm drawing from Shelby is that we can emphasize this idea that we're all role models, even if you're 14, 15. You can be a role model for that next group right behind you.
Really good. Definitely.
Tennis Pal Coach has everything a coach needs to expand and generate business right in the palm of their hand. With Tennis Pal Coach, coaches can access the fastest growing community of tennis players on an app. They can analyze videos and communicate with students via text or video chat anywhere in the world. Coaches can also plan and schedule lessons as well as receive payment. Tennis Pal Coach, because coaching doesn't have to stop off the court.